Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. What do we know about life in Cuban neighborhoods? If you are from Cuba or if you have family there and have been able to travel back, you know how most of the island is trapped in an era from decades past. That life has been captured in a new exhibition of photos called Cuba, Paradise Lost in Nostalgia. The photos in the exhibition come from a collection of award-winning photographers. They were collected during a trip to Havana just before the Trump administration put tighter restrictions on travel to the communist island. We spoke with the lead photographer and the curator of the exhibition, Miami Herald photographer Carl Joost, and we started the conversation about misconceptions people have about the island nation.
I think people get caught up in nostalgia. It's complex, and the use of nostalgia is a tool to prop up ideas, prop up propaganda. It's really interesting because you go to Cuba now, at least when I visited, nostalgia is everywhere. You have pictures of Che, you have pictures of the revolution and the various iconic images that came about after 1959. And at the same breath, you have the old Esso trademarks and you have all these Americana pre-revolution. And it's this awkward space where the government is using that era to attract tourists. But at the same time, you know, you're just trying to hold the bottle shut and opening it slightly every 2 seconds. The genie is out.
You know, I was looking through the photographs, and I mean, you have some black and whites, but most of them are color.
Right.
Brilliant colors in the clothes, the buildings, the cars. It even seemed like the sky had this brilliance to it. I don't know. And I wondered, though, because it's interesting, like, but yet you have this, it's a communist nation. There's a poverty. It's this weird contrast. Were you trying to find that?
Yeah. You know, Cuba speaks for itself. I didn't give any of the photographers or photojournalists any specific aim or any specific objective. So I have this color called Cuban blue. And it's, if you notice the cars, and it's reflecting the sky, it's in the buildings, and it's this repetitive calmness in the midst of, sometimes can be very chaotic if you live there. And I think that, you know, you see kids with cell phones. You do see improvements because Cubans, I think, by nature, entrepreneurs. And I think it's one of the factors that helped build Miami.
You know, you talk about that nostalgia. And so, I mean, again, you look at these pictures and we see like they're stuck in an era.
Right.
And I wondered, I mean, look, we see that, or at least I'm thinking of like this guy, an outsider. I look at that and I'm like, I mean, that looks interesting, but it also looks kind of sad. Like, they're stuck there. Do Cubans there believe they're stuck there?
I think Cubans, the most Cubans that I've spoken to and had some type of correspondence with, I think they would say they're here and they're making the best of it in spite of, you know, 50 plus years of embargo. It started opening up a little bit. And when I was there, there was Americans everywhere. There was this exchange. There was this conversation. Every time I've been to Cuba since the special period, which dates back early, late 80s to 1999, every time I've been back, it has moved in a certain direction. Now, for some people, they may say, well, kind of loss is charm. But I don't find nothing charming about being poor. I don't find anything charming about being persecuted. I don't find anything charming when your freedoms are restricted. But I do find, and I wouldn't use the word charming, what I do find very exciting is the resiliency. Because I see that same resiliency in Cuba that I see in Haiti, or I see in Mexico, or I see in Brazil.
When you were out there, I wondered how Cubans responded to you with your camera.
Because I'm doing this book, Havana, Haiti, Two Cultures, One Community, I went with some type of permission of the cultural department.
Okay.
So I went. I didn't go underground. I didn't want to go underground because I wanted to be honest in my approach. When I approached someone, I wanted to be honest. This is not about politics. It's about humanity, right? And trying to form a connection, a bridge to what, like I always tell my friends, what the pain in Haiti is the same pain in Havana. That there is pain is pain, and I'm trying to connect to what draws us together, right? So I needed to do that with an honest approach. So what I found that when I was talking to people and talking to the person in the street who was doing their daily hustle, because Cubans know how to hustle, and it's not a dance step, it's a lifestyle. They can hustle.
When you have to go through the government, basically. So you're not going underground. What does that mean? Does that mean that they're watching over you or they're telling you what I'm you sure. can and can't do?
No, we had a taxi service. We had certain things that were pre-set up, but I was not censored in any way because I didn't go to Cuba with any specific goal or idea or agenda. I went there to see myself, and I found myself in so many different people. And I went there to bring a little bit of me back to Miami. So the pictures that you're seeing now is not pictures of just Cubans. It's pictures of you, pictures of me. If life was slightly more different, that's how we probably would look like. So that's the connection.
I love how you said you're talking about that hustle. You mentioned that. And, you know, we've discussed that on the program a lot. And is it a Latino thing? Is it a Caribbean thing? Where's that hustle come from?
I think it's a Caribbean, poor, struggling, you know, underserved, looking for freedom thing. Because when light is taken away from you, the power of a match is so much more powerful. So that's the only way I could explain it. I am a product. I am an immigrant who left the country under persecution. So I get it. My mom is Cuban. She would talk about Cuba. She'd talk about Santiago, talk about Havana. And so I really, and when I arrived in Miami out of New York, my core friends were all Cubans, you know? And this pride like Haitians that we have in our nostalgia. You know, you're in the car and someone say, well, when I was in Cuba, you know, I was a doctor. That was the stories I was hearing when I first came there. Or when I was in Cuba, you know, I was a psychologist. And they hold on to the best of themselves. And that's why they were able to do so much great things in Miami. Because though it had a painful experience, and it's difficult to be displaced, for them to understand that they have achieved heights, that the height can be obtained in a more freer society, it opens up a lot of doors to them. So I have to give it to my Cuban brothers and sisters. I think we share the same imagination.
I'm talking with the Miami Herald photographer, Carl Joost. He's the lead photographer behind the new group exhibition, Cuba, Paradise Lost in Nostalgia, on display now at the Iris Photo Collective Art Space in Little Haiti. You can see some of the photos of the exhibition on our social media. Find us at WLRN Sundial. I wanted to pick out two photos to ask you about, because these, for me anyway, they jumped out a lot. One of them is this gentleman who's standing there. He's dressed in white.
Oh, yeah.
White pants, the white vest. Tell me a little bit about who this guy was.
That picture was shot by Jeffrey Allen Salter, who's an extremely talented and gifted photographer and former photojournalist. We're walking down we're going to go grab some lunch, and we came upon this beautiful wall that looked like a wall you would see in Beirut. Looked like it was bullet ridden, you know? And we're looking at it and said, man, that's a really dope wall. And at the corner of my eye, we both spot this gentleman walking in a Caribbean Afrocentric swagger. And he's walking towards us. And we had an agreement, right? First sight, first get. So if he sees something first, I gotta put down my camera. Right? So he goes, I got this one, right? So he pulls up his camera, and he doesn't speak much Spanish, but my Spanish is about maybe two levels higher than his, right? So I ask him, I pull him aside and say, I tell him in Spanish, you know, like, take your picture, give me a moment, I like your style. He spoke a little broken English, we started laughing, and then Jeffrey said, just stay right there. And to me, he embodies the best of, I think, of the Cuban spirit.
I wonder, what is Afro-Cuban swagger?
Oh, man, it has a rhythm, a cadence to it, you know? It's like a movement. It's like a left to the right, left to the right. It's almost like he's dancing with the wind. It was beautiful. I'm telling you. It was no joke. If I had a video, I'd have videotaped it.
Now I see this man, because, again, the picture, you know, you see that attitude, but now I'm picturing him walking.
Man, it's like, it's like watching a jaguar, you know, just like a dark jaguar walking down with a sense of authority, with a sense of purpose.
In contrast, the other photo I wanted to talk to you about was it was an elderly person in a bed, and there was another person, I'd imagine a relative, watching over them.
Yes, this is Carol Guzzi's photo essay called Mama, and Mama is an insular view of the life of a lot of Cubans, as the because the subsidies of there's no longer Russian subsidies, and Cuba really relies on the tourist dollars to support some of the social initiatives. A lot of the elderly are being taken care of, though. I mean, Cubans and like Caribbean people do take care of their grandparents, but this young woman is now left to take care of for her mom, and she cannot walk, her feet is deformed, and she has some issues. And the photo essay kind of covers a couple of days of her life. And the mother becomes Cuba's past, and the daughter becomes Cuba's present. And then this relationship back and forth, the mother is somewhat docile, almost like a doll. And she is somewhat has to surrender her life because she wants to. She loves her mom. But you see what that love means, the sacrifice. It symbolizes a lot of the Cuban expatriates. They see their country and the love they have for their country. They want to care for their country. But it's so difficult in these circumstances. And I think that's what I think she caught very well.
There's something I've always found fascinating about photographers is how you get shots. And I understand, I can understand how there are times when things are just happening very quickly and you've got to be, if you're there, you got it. But some of them seem so personal. And I wonder how you get so close that people would let you that close to take something that we've seen this. I've seen this with my abuela in bed and my mother taking care of her. How do you get those kind of pictures? How do you do that?
I think you have to embed yourself not only physically, but emotionally. For images to actually work, it has to become a portal. And in order to get that image or a group of images to facilitate as a conduit, you really, proximity is everything. You have to be in it, but not about it.
There's another picture. There's a picture of what looks like a very official building. And then there's the word Cuba, the sign Cuba. And then I see it from the distance.
And that car is coming by?
And a car is coming by. And then it seems like I'm looking at that same Cuba sign, but up close at a later time of day.
Right.
It's the same thing, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is fascinating to me because it gives me two different views of something, and I feel something different with each one. But tell me, what is that spot?
It's right on the Malecón, and it's right by the National Hotel. The National Hotel used to be the hotel. It's like the Fountain Blue of Havana, right? This is where back in, it's where all the rich, connected, kind of some gangsters, the Wheeler dealers, this is where they hang out, like the Fountain Blue. And what I love about that picture is because it really has a really postcard feel to it. It has all the elements that attract you to Cuba. It has the beautiful blue sky, has a wonderful architecture, has this reference to nostalgia. And if you look way in a corner, the streets look empty, and it's a little guy walking. And it's almost perfect. It's the illusion within the truth. And I thought that was very impactful because it kind of encapsulated the whole project. And then you look at the sun setting, and you see the letters, they're not as bright. They're somewhat, it'll almost seem like they're faded. That speaks to memory, right? When you have a memory that you can recall some details, but everything seemed kind of behind a frosted window. So you're looking at this beautiful sunset, which is the subject. But as the subject flows, you see the sun that says Cuba. It almost seems like it has retired. And there's a weight to it, right? One is very light, one's very heavy.
Which speaks back to your point of patience, because you have to come back and get that second picture the right way.
Yeah, because you have to speak, right? Images is what words and phrases and sentences and stories are to writers. It's a visual language, right?
Yeah.
Everybody's bilingual. You speak the visual language first, and then you get the written language second, the spoken language. But the best pictures are not reflective. They're more images that you go through. Young audience won't get this, but you ever went through a line of clothes just freshly put on a line, and you run through it? That's the same thing.
hanging the clothes out in the lines outside.
And you go run right through it. The breeze picks it up, and you have this process. And that's the joy. That's the art of making imagery. I mean, imagery. It's not the product. It's the process where realness meets human expression.
That was Miami Herald photographer Carl Joost. He is one of a group of photographers in an exhibit called Cuba, Paradise Lost in Nostalgia. It runs from August 24th through October 10th at the newly installed Iris Photo Collective Art Space in Little Haiti. Well, still to come, we're going to meet a Key West artist whose work looks at family, loss, and superstition. That's coming up next. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Well, a collection of wildly bold and colorful paintings dealing with themes like family, loss, and faith are now on display at the Bryan Gallery at the Custom House in Key West. They are by painter and sculptor Olga Manasalvas. She was born in New York, but was heavily influenced by her Ecuadorian family's faith and superstitions. She then moved to Madrid and went to art school there. And all of that is depicted in her latest exhibit, The Restless Eye, The Visions of Olga Manasalvas, which is on display now through September 30th. I sat down with her yesterday and we talked about some of her pieces. So Olga, I wanted to ask you about the influences you had starting all the way back when you were a kid, and whether you had art at home or it was what you learned in school, and obviously, you know, later in life going to Madrid to school. How would you describe how your style was shaped and what your style is?
When I was a child, my parents made sure to take us to museums in New York City as often as possible. So I saw a lot of art growing up. Also, I didn't speak for quite a few years. And when I'd hear a word, in my head, it was an object. I think I started drawing that way. For example, Articles of Impeachment, which is one of my paintings was made during the Clinton debacle. And Articles of Impeachment, to me, meant things that folks use for torturing people. So that's why I put them in the painting, because to me, I still think that way when I hear words, pictures appear in my mind. I wanted to express what I thought the Articles of Impeachment meant, something to physical to torture someone with. And so that's why you see the figures preparing to torture this being who's busy doing something he ought not to be doing.
You know, when I looked at some of your work, I think about some of the different artists that I've studied over the years. Who were the influences, you know, the artistic influences for you?
When I was a kid, it was Gauguin for the color, the sun, the light, especially being brought up in New York City where it was always gray. The German expressionists, Max Beckmann, Egon Schiele, people that really used figurative work to express a lot of emotion through color and through gesture.
So I want to dive into this exhibition. It's called Restless Eye. You named it. Why? What does that represent?
Actually, I titled it The Restless Eye because I look at everything, and if it strikes me, as in myths, dreams, magic, especially magic realism, if a figure represents something spiritual to me, I will try and make that image. I am a restless, my mind is restless. I get bored if I do one thing or pay attention to one thing at a time. I like to look around and gather impressions from things that I see or people that I talk to.
Going through your pieces, and I want to point out a couple of them, part of the themes that I see is family. One of the pieces is called The Yaman, and this is fascinating. Okay, so I see a figure on a bed, and then I see four other people on that bed as well. I see two women with their backs to this figure who's lying there, a third figure holding the feet on her lap, again, of this figure who is lying there. And a fourth figure really stands out. She's bright. She's light-skinned. She's bright in color of what she's wearing. Her hair is fiery. and she's on the telephone, and she's looking at that figure lying in the bed. Tell me what I'm looking at.
What you are looking at is the sisters of the figure on the bed. He died suddenly, so they all went to the house, dressed him, washed him, and the woman on the bed is one of the family members that is very important in this kind of ritual. And what she's doing is she's calling the rest of the family to inform them that this man has died. So that's why I painted her that way. She is a firecracker. You know, she's always in the thick of things. When you have an emergency, you go to this particular person.
And then I see it looks like the spirit of this man leaving the room.
Yes, and the cat underneath, the cat is the only being that notices the soul leaving through the open window.
Again, the artwork, the piece is called The Yaman. It translates in English to They Are Calling You. And there are a lot of pieces that you have that have these connections to death, to faith, to superstitions. Why are you drawn to these themes? What's fascinating about them for you?
The unseen has always drawn me, and also growing up with stories of family members who have passed away, but you can still feel them in our homes. You can, for example, I have a great aunt whose daughter passed away tragically, and she was crying and praying the rosary, and all of a sudden she hears this huge boom, and her window completely shattered. And I think that it was my cousin who came back to tell mom, okay, cut it out. I'm free. That's enough.
Wow. You know what? I'm curious about your upbringing and, you know, I guess the spirituality in the house. What was it like?
Oh, that was fascinating as a little girl for me, because my grandmother would have little saints on her bureau with lit candles. And she would tell me stories of, if you pray to this one, you'll get that. If you pray to that one, you'll get this other thing. And she told me stories of fantasmas and what'll happen to you if you're a bad girl and things like that. I loved it all. And I had an aunt who would take me to these horrible movies. I was little. That had crucifixions of Christ, you know, the whole bloody, gory stuff. So instead of scaring me, it just fascinated me. So I'm still attracted to that kind of dark symbolism.
I'm talking with Olga Manosalvas. She's an Ecuadorian painter and sculptor who is currently based in the Florida Keys. Now, she's been doing this work for more than 40 years. Her most recent exhibition, The Restless Eye, The Visions of Olga Manosalvas, is on display now through September 30th at the Bryan Gallery at the Custom House, which is part of the Key West Art and Historical Society. It's a collection of wildly bold and colorful renditions dealing with themes like family, loss, and faith. And you can find more information about the exhibit and see photos on our website at WLRN.org. You know, again, talking about this family theme, we look at another piece, Family Circle. And this one's really interesting in this sense. The other one, there was a separation of the characters. Even though they were all together in a room, they felt separate. In this one, I mean, everybody is on top of everybody in this very tight space. It gets a little claustrophobic. almost so close that it's like no one looks happy. And I'm wondering, what are you trying to capture here?
That's those moments when you have been way too long with your family in a situation. So, yes, I meant to express claustrophobia. Every one of them is preoccupied with a certain thing. For example, the woman that's clutching the man's pant leg is trying to make him stop bothering the child, and the child is busy screaming at the older man. The young man with the crown on his head is desperate to shut his kid up, and there's a little figure on the bottom that is the figure that is quiet and observing all of this and is miserable.
Was that your experience with your family?
I've seen it, let's put it that way.
So, Olga, you went to Madrid, and you went to a very prestigious art institute. Why?
My family was separated when I was a kid, and part of us went to Spain. So I studied there for a year at the Escuela de Bellas Artes, and then we came back to New York. it was very good training, because when the person who was responsible for letting students in looked at my work, my portfolio, they said, well, here in your country, they teach backwards. They teach you to be, expressive. Here, you have to learn from the classics. And I needed that, because I only drew things that came out of my head, and very flat figures. And they taught me how to represent figures on canvas and paper in three dimension, shading, etc.
There's a very different way of approaching art in Europe compared to the United States.
Very much so. It's much slower, because they say you have to, you have to learn how to ride a bicycle before you can go out there on a highway, for example.
You know, my understanding is that you haven't shown any of your work really to the public in quite a while, right?
That is correct. I submerge quite a bit. I'm a bit of a recluse. And I have, about 20 years ago, I had big shows. I had one in Ecuador and in New York City, et cetera. And it really took a toll on me. So I decided, you know what, I'm just going to make things because I have to. That's the way my life is. So I guess that's why I hid for 20 years. But I just kept making things.
And then you decided, well, now is the time to come back and show everybody.
No, actually, someone asked. No one's really bothered to ask me before. Or if they have, I decided, I'm not really ready yet. But someone asked at the correct time, because my storage space was overflowing. So I had to get the stuff out there.
How has life in Key West influenced your work?
Oh, my gosh. The Cuban families and their stories. The voodoo, the Santeria in particular. This place is just spiritually an amalgam of all kinds of ghosts, if you will, of the past and the present. And so being that kind of person, I was just, crazy for it, because I met so many very interesting people, and the artists here are unbelievable.
How do you view the future? Is it about continuing to grow and change, or just producing what you know?
I have changed a bit in my style, so I think I'm going to keep following that route.
Do you see yourself opening yourself up to expressing yourself more to the public, or do you think, well, here's an exhibit, and then I'll go back to my studio and do my thing again and hide for a while?
Well, the latter would be ideal for me. But the powers that be, those people that want to push me out there, I'm never going to say no. So, yes, I assume that I will continue to be more open.
That was Olga Manosalvas. Her latest exhibition, The Restless Eye, The Visions of Olga Manosalvas, is on display now through September 30th in Key West. Find more information about the exhibit on our website at WLRN.org. Well, that's our program for this Tuesday, August 20th. Coming up tomorrow, we're going to look at a company called JPay. It's handling electronic video services and emails for prisons. But does that mean that they're also reducing face-to-face communication with people? They're out of Miramar. We're going to learn more about them tomorrow. Plus, a new film called Peanut Butter Falcon is out in theaters this weekend, and we're going to meet the star, who's from Boynton Beach. All of that coming up tomorrow on the program. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you tomorrow.